Welcome, everyone, to the Comedy Sports Podcast with your host, Christine Rolo Capriolo. And now, the man once known as my mother's son. Oh, it's me.
Welcome, everyone, to the Comedy Sports Podcast. I'm Christine Rolo Capriolo. Today, we have a super fun, amazing guest. PJ Rockwell. Hey, Peej.
I thought it was somebody else when you started there. I was looking around. Who's here?
Thanks for coming, PJ.
Oh, you're entirely more than welcome, like a mat in front of a door.
You are very special and unique in this podcast because you are a behind-the-scenes guy.
I have been for quite a lot of my former theater career.
Yeah. So first I want to start with, where are you from? Where were you born?
Oh, boy. Savannah, Illinois, in a 18-inch snowfall.
In an 18? So did your mama make it to the hospital?
Oh, she got to the hospital, and then the snow came.
Okay.
The doctor went home. This is Savannah, Illinois, little Mississippi River town, my dad's first teaching job.
Okay.
The doctor went home, and the snowstorm came up. I was actually delivered then, because my mom was in hard labor for 42 hours.
42
hours. The kind of birth they would not have today.
No.
They had to call in a veterinarian who got on a tractor and made it to the hospital, because the hospital was located up on these bluffs in Savannah, Illinois. The city was down on the Mississippi River.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was a high forceps delivery, they call it.
Oh.
And, yeah, that's my birth story.
Your mother is a hero.
And I have a younger sister. That's the miracle of life.
She had another one.
She had another one.
Wow.
I paved this 10-pound, 25-inches long.
Yeah.
Paved the way.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, did you grow up there?
No, actually, I have moved in my life 58 times.
58.
And so, 13 of those were in childhood. Savannah, Illinois was like, I don't even remember. I was two and a half. We moved to Madison. My dad finished his doctorate, got his first college teaching job in California, moved to Bloomington, Indiana. Atlanta, Georgia. Finally landed my hometown.
Yeah.
Eighth grade, Platteville, Wisconsin. So
okay.
I am a cheesehead okay. by affirmation.
Okay.
I might say. I love all things Wisconsin.
Now,
including the weather.
Oh, gosh.
I do.
We'll have to beg to differ on that one.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yikes. So were you always a theatrical kid? Did you always like theater?
I was, because I was always trying to get into the new school's
yeah.
social scene.
That's hard.
I learned to be the class clown.
Okay.
And occasionally pushed some boundaries, mostly with teachers.
Yeah.
The kids loved it. Not so much the ones who wanted to control the classroom. But yeah, it came naturally to me. My mother was also a theatrical person. My dad loved to sing. It was a really fun family unit. And
okay.
all these car trips across the country.
Yeah.
We told stories. We played card games where, you know, all those things you do in long trips. And I've always been a fairly gregarious person in my life.
Okay. Did you want to grow up and go into theater, or did you
no,
want to be something else?
I just wanted to meet girls and boys. And anyway, so I didn't find my love of theater until I actually started doing it in college.
Oh, okay.
A couple high school plays, but that was just the social wanting mm-hmm. to be the center of attention.
Right. Where'd you go to college?
UW-Platteville.
Okay.
For my undergrad, because my dad was a professor there and I could live at home.
Okay. What'd you study?
Oh, I was a theater major.
Oh, you were? Okay.
Yeah, and journalism minor.
Okay.
I probably put as much work into the journalism minor as I did the work on the college paper, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And
okay.
So, yeah.
And then how did you come to Milwaukee and find out about comedy sports?
Ah.
What's your story?
Well, the story was, I was fortunate to be married for quite a while to the great, late great, Lori Birmingham.
Mm-hmm.
Lori Birmingham was one of the original comedy sports opponents in the very first comedy sports game at UWM's arena, or the Student Union, in
yeah.
1984. And they had the athletes
mm-hmm.
from comedy sports, and they recruited a bunch of the professional theater training program actors.
Okay.
And also one of my dearest friends, Bo Johnson.
Yeah.
Was on that team as well. And I always like to sort of jokingly rub it in the nose of Chudnow that Comedy Sports lost its first match.
Yeah.
To this team that my dear, I didn't know her at the time.
Okay.
We met a few years later. With Laurie Birmingham. So okay. Now that's not how I came to Comedy Sports, but I knew of it from that story.
Oh, from that story. From
that
Laurie.
Story.
Okay.
I saw it when it was at Colts.
Yes.
And after Laurie and I were married in the same day. It was a really quick courtship. So I had seen it a couple of shows, but then in 92, when I was had decided my major life change to become a massage therapist and have steady employment and stop all that moving.
The best massage therapist, by the way.
Yeah. And which was what I was born to do. Carol Bow Wow Hershey, Carol Bauman at the time, recruited me because she'd known I had been a stage manager, one of the 28 jobs I'd had in the theater.
Oh, my God.
As you said, mostly backstage.
Right.
And she knew that I knew how to run a show. And at the time, it is that classic herding cats with comedians and getting them to do things on time.
Right.
So my first couple of weeks, all I did was come in and stand in the booth and make sure everything sort of, because they had a Mr. Voice.
Right.
They had obviously, Paula Foley was on music, the inevitable Roger Hebner on sound effects. So there were four of us in this crowded booth.
Okay.
A booth I would, years later, come to run by myself and did all those jobs. But that's getting ahead of that story. So I just basically made sure the show ran on time and that sort of thing. And then I kind of wormed my way into being Mr. Voice. I don't know how that happened. Maybe the guy didn't show up. And then they found out I can scream into a microphone with the worst of them. And so that's how the Mr. Voice thing started.
Okay.
All through massage school. I was only with Comedy Sports for about 10 months at that time. Went off to the Utah Shakespeare Festival for 5 years.
Right.
And then when we came home, I was thinking Milwaukee is my home now, live here the most. That's I felt right back into it, the same sort of family feel that I love these people to this day. And I haven't done it for 16 years on a regular basis now. But I'm going to get really emotional now if I follow this path that I love every one of these people and the heart and soul that they bring to every show and their commitment. Anyway, I just love being around them. And so even though I, had my own, like most people do in Comedy Sports, they have a real job.
Sure.
And they just do it like on the side.
Yeah.
Rolly's a lawyer and, you can go through the whole list.
Right.
People are doing things and then they come together.
Yeah.
And so anyway, sorry.
That's all right. You're great. You are iconic.
I'm rambling.
Are the Mr. Voice. So when you left for the Shakespeare Festival and came back, we were probably out of Cults and on Jefferson Street.
I actually joined when it was on Jefferson.
Oh, you did?
Yeah,
okay.
Right on the cusp of that. I think it had only been there for maybe a year.
I'm not
91, 92, somewhere in there.
And then, so you said you started doing Mr. Voice. Suddenly you were everything. You were the stage manager, you were Mr. Voice, you were lights, you were sound, you were hurting these crazy comedians.
That kind of progressed as things occurred. Brilliant musician that I still see. Esther Jen played music for a while. But after a while, she stopped, and I kind of just had seen it, Paula doing it. And I'd play a little keyboards, just enough to do like stings in a game called Soap Opera.
Mm-hmm.
I could fill. They had all the music on these little cards, and I knew. I just had a coordination. My left hand was running music. My right hand had a microphone. You just learned a sort of a booth coordination, how to do everything at the same time without and still watching the scene and anticipating what was going to be needed.
Yeah,
you develop that from watching. Not so much playing, because I'm not a player.
Right. But you did once play in a show.
I oddly enough, I think I might be the only Comedy Sports person who has reffed more shows than played.
Really?
Yeah. My first Now, I had done improv in my actor training in undergrad.
And
first
did you
improv
take workshops?
Was 72, 73. But in the comedy sports world, which is different, but still based on Spolin's improv work, theater games, it came... It was a very scary experience because I had watched it for about 6 months in that first stint. And Karen Stobie, at the time, Poleznik, they were missing a person for the 10 o'clock Saturday night show, which is a big show.
That's a big
a lot
one.
Of energy. I think there was a couple of bachelorette parties, you know, things that a ref has to control. So at 5 minutes to go, she just turned to me and everybody said, "Well, PJ's watched it for a while. Let's put him in."
Yeah.
Oh, the adrenaline. And that's and Roger used to do the intros before I got there in his history. So I just handed Roger I got a quick uniform, quick beep, and boom.
Beep and boom.
I'm on the field.
And then what did you notice? Well, here you've been watching for years and suddenly you're up there. What did you realize?
What I really realized is that it's both easy and hard at the same time. In that if you get out of your own way, it's easy.
Yeah.
If you block yourself, it's darn near impossible. So I just tried to listen the best I could. Fortunately, they were really smart because in the first half, they didn't unknown commodity. So what they had chosen was a lot of audience games, normally an audience member games.
Okay.
And they put me in it.
Okay.
Like, can you remember the games? It was like Dr. Know-It-All.
Yeah.
But without me as the audience member,
okay.
Essentially. They did let me do some talking in the second half of the show. But, foreign movie. So I just did some gibberish.
Right.
But people are also on a high state of alert. Like when anybody has their first show, even people who have done all the workshops.
Mm-hmm.
There was this sort of, okay, make sure PJ doesn't fall off the field. So later, as they got more confidence in me, I actually got scheduled to play in that before I left for Utah Sunday. They let me play a few times.
Yeah.
It was really fun.
And you loved it?
I did. I enjoyed. And then a couple of, and the whole reffing thing, being more a ref than a player, started because, frankly, it's part of the controlling time, which is a natural talent for a stage manager.
Sure.
And once I learned the ref spiel, which I'd heard him, you know, hundreds of times
right.
already, it was probably better for me to control the timing of the games and the how the show is going, and let the better talents, clearly people with more experience, be the players.
Right.
So whenever anybody would be not show up, well, I'll just ref.
Yeah.
And then the real players will play.
Okay.
And that made sense.
Sure. So you ended up reffing a couple dozen times.
Yeah, I would say in Milwaukee, I probably played ref a dozen times.
Okay.
It's not an extensive experience.
Sure.
I can remember almost all. Now, in Utah, when I went to Utah Shakes, during the school year, after a couple years there, I formed a college team, ex officio, and Dick got mad at me for it because as an homage, I wanted to call it comedy sports and train the kids in theater games from Spolin's work. But obviously having a little dip into the comedy sports world, I called them by their comedy sports names.
The games by their names.
Yeah. And so we actually did a couple of college shows. And because they didn't know anything about the format, I reffed those shows.
Okay.
Just, I mean, we didn't charge admission.
It right.
I wasn't making any money off of this, Mr. Chudnow. But I'm not cutting into the royalties, sir. Your honor. So that was fun. And that's probably why I say I've reffed more than I've played.
Right. Now, what has improv or watching improv that long, what has it helped you with in your life?
Bring joy to my heart.
Oh.
I laughter, you know, cliche, best medicine, but oh man, is it. I'm going to get emotional, but the sense of family and I just love being around it.
Yeah.
And I'm probably some people who may run the booth or be backstage in a play, they want to be in the spotlight.
Yeah.
I don't need the spotlight.
Yeah.
I like people to know me as a great massage therapist or other aspects of my life, a kind person. That's more important to me than having to have that reaffirmed on stage.
Sure.
So being able to support and just enjoy the work of these family members.
Yeah.
Just joy.
What are some of your favorite memories from being the stage manager down there?
Okay, here's one. There was a game called Radio.
Yes.
Okay? And for anybody listening to this, it's a cool game. I don't know if it's played anymore, but the referee has a flashlight, and all the players line up in a line, mm-hmm. and they're essentially each of them are, from the audience are assigned radio stations to do a format.
Right.
And then there is a subject gotten. It's classic comedy sports way of making sure it's fresh. You get it from the audience.
Right.
And then the all the lights go out, which is really cool.
Yeah, that's fun.
Even back in the days of when it was on Jefferson Street, even had to unplug the scoreboard.
Oh, yes.
You know, you had to make sure all the lights.
Right.
So when I would then go backstage, because it wasn't needed in the booth, with a flashlight in case anybody with another flashlight make sure the ref had one. So there was this one time this game was being played, and the referee makes the flashlight go along the line, and if you're in the flashlight, you're as a player, you're then telling the story in the format of that radio station,
right?
Like country western or whatever the thing at rap, you know. And so there was a time when I think it was Joe Cortese. I'm pretty sure Joe Cortese had gotten anger as an endowment, and angry radio guy, and he was yelling, and he, in his enthusiasm,
right.
it was Bo Johnson was reffing.
Okay,
and I could have this wrong, so you know, it's an old memory, but he reached down and knocked the flashlight
out of
Bo's hand. It went flying into the audience somewhere, and. Because I happened to be there backstage and watching this from behind the curtain, I immediately ran out and gave Bo my flashlight. Later on, he was astounded that I would have had such incredible preparation to be standing by with another flashlight, where I was just using the flashlight to be able to plug the scoreboard and turn on the lights.
Save the day again, PJ.
I was not brilliant. I was lucky.
Save the show. Save the show. Well, you definitely have been around many, many people down there, in town, out of town, people coming in. Tell me a little bit about Roger Hubba Hubba Huebner.
Wow.
Rest in peace. He was our old sound effects guy.
Yeah.
Tell me about working with him.
Roger was very, to say the word shy is to imply that it doesn't have enough letters to really...
Yeah, he was
a unique personality.
Very.
Now I'm working for the United Nations. Roger was in a way really hard to get to know, but because I worked with him in the booth and he was always to my right, we developed a rapport over the years where Roger opened up to me probably more than anybody else.
Yeah.
From my observance of the way he interacted with others.
Mm-hmm.
I would give him rides home sometime to South Milwaukee when he missed his bus.
Right.
And Roger told me stuff that I won't share with you now.
No.
Because my father was a counselor educator.
Yeah.
And it's private. But I admire mostly about Roger professionally is the thing that I don't think a lot of people understand that. It's not just doing sound effects at Comedy Sports. I mean, you can do sound effects and be able to do that physically, but it's sound effects plus anticipation.
Mm-hmm.
Be able to be a millisecond ahead of what a player is just coming into their mind that Roger intuited, and he had a sound effect for when the player then made the hand gesture which was the sound effect.
Right.
Even something simple like pressing a doorbell.
Right. He knew.
Yeah. He knew ahead of time.
Yeah.
And so I think that's something that I don't think a lot of people realized.
Yeah. Well, and I don't think a lot of people realize just how much effort and time and commitment it took to be a stage manager when you ran the show.
Well, as kind of an old saying, a stage manager is a person that basically only gets attention paid to them when something goes wrong. So if nobody ever knew that a field manager, to use the parlance of comedy sports, if nobody ever knew that I even existed as a field manager, just in that part of it, that's a success.
That's a good show.
Yeah, that's a good show. Everything went right.
Did anything ever go wrong, PJ?
Oh, no. It was just perfect. Everyone was always on time.
Right.
And,
yes.
I'm back with the United Nations. being diplomatic. You know, no immediate story pops into my head. Every now and then there were some personality squabbles.
Sure.
And I can turn on a forceful side of my personality. Oh, I think I'm pretty mellow as a person, but as a profession, there are times when you just have to establish the respect that I'm in charge of this show.
Right.
And if you have consistently, for instance, not shown up on time, because it is about, I was told once by a professional who was teaching me stage managing, 95% of stage managing is time management. And so that's the most critical thing. If you have violated the sacred three, things come in, a third time when you showed up at 7:25 for a 7:30 show, I'm not going to let you play.
Yeah.
Now, that takes a little bit of gall in some cases to walk up to somebody like Angelo Farina. Not that Angelo, rest his soul, would ever be late. I don't know why Ange popped into my head, but he's always in my heart. But for one of the established pros,
to
walk up to them and say, I'm in charge of a thing that you've been doing for
forever,
a decade longer than me, it takes a little bit of moxie.
Well, you were nothing but respected. You were just amazing. Your reputation down there still to this day with people who may have never even met you is amazing. And I don't know how you did it. You would be running the show, doing voice, doing lights. And then when I was younger, every comedy sports show I was in, I would get hurt somehow. I would come home with bruises and ouches. And I remember once it was halftime. And something got tweaked. Something happened to my back. So I don't know. Somebody threw me down. I don't know. You know how it is a
physical job.
It's very physical. So when I was in Madison, I would leave every night with bruises. Yeah. Like someone was
moving
beating
bodies.
Me. Yes, just that's constantly.
That's a dangerous
but
game.
I remember at halftime, and you knew something happened to me. And you were like, are you okay? And you're like, come here. You in the women's dressing room, you had your massage table. I got on the table. You quickly loosened up my back. Boom, got his back out for the next half of the show.
It was convenient to have around upon occasion.
Oh, my God.
Without violating the trust and the ethics of telling, you know, you've come out to say that you've been worked on.
Yeah.
I will not name them, but there's probably half a dozen other athletes that I have fixed at some point.
Oh, at halftime?
Yeah, of shows. To keep it's a trainer. I mean, yeah.
Absolutely. Well, I just don't know how you do it. And then boom, you know, suddenly I'm there. I'm feeling better. You're running out. You're starting the second half. Amazing. You commented that you've had, I don't know how many jobs. Can you quickly list?
Oh, no, I can't quickly do it. But I've had 61 job titles.
Oh, my gosh.
And how I define that is jobs that you get paid for.
Right.
Not volunteer. 28 were in the theater. But to give you an example of how that can magnify itself, within one discipline, you can have, for instance, I was a box office assistant.
Okay.
Assistant box office manager, box office manager. At Utah. So along that same line, assistant stage manager, different job titles.
Right.
Puffs it up a little bit.
Got it.
But I've been working since the eighth grade. I start right with my paper route because I got paid for it.
Sure.
I was a sports reporter in high school, getting paid for $2 for sports stories starting my junior year in high school.
Okay.
For the Platteville Journal. Got my journalism thing started. I worked my way through college. I have always done, so if you've worked for, and here comes the age thing, but it's true, 52 years now.
Yeah.
I've been working for 52 years. I was unemployed for about 6 weeks in 81, and I didn't know, I had to move out of the state. There was the Reagan recession. Anyway, long story short, when you just keep working like that, you and going and moving a lot, you're going to be doing a different job.
Right.
And it pays to be flexible.
Yeah.
People in the theater, I don't know, for instance, there is a statistic in Actors Equity, which also includes stage management, there is a 95% unemployment rate, which means at any given time, only 5% of union members, not even non-union, are working at any given time. So to get a job as an actor is really hard.
Yeah.
So if you are willing to work backstage, build costumes, do whatever. I was a carpenter. I was a props artisan. You know, the list.
Yeah.
Pick up any theater program.
You were
look in the back.
Yeah.
I have done pretty much all of them.
Oh, wow. So it's in you.
Yeah. I do like being around smart, talented people.
Yeah. So... Now, why, I don't want to end it on a sad note, but
no.
You left Comedy Sports, Peege, on a regular basis. I mean, every once in a while you'll pop in and announce, but...
I think it's a young person's game.
Yeah?
When I turned 50, and also I was making the transition from Jefferson Street to where it is now on First.
On First Street.
It seemed like a good time for me to just focus on being a massage therapist.
Okay.
There were 2 years... It was 2002 and 2003. Every Friday and Saturday, I had 2 15-hour days back to back. So I would be at, I worked in a spa. I was doing 5 or 6 massages, which is pretty high energy work.
Yeah.
on Friday, go down and be at Comedy Sports from set up at 6 to close at midnight.
Yeah.
Go home, try to get as much sleep as possible. Saturdays were very busy at the spa. I go in and do 6, sometimes 7 massages. Go down, run 2 Comedy Sports shows. So 2 years of 15-hour days, if I'm just on Friday and Saturday.
Yeah, that's a lot, though.
I was getting tired.
Yeah.
And when you turn 50, it's a typical age when you want to sort of reassess and do you really want to be that scattered.
Yeah.
And it was just time to focus. And since the Comedy Sports itself was moving physically, it took a lot of energy. It was just time to change.
Okay. What do you miss most?
Oh, the people.
The people.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I don't laugh as much in my life now. I laugh a lot, but those were the most laugh-filled years, however many years I was there. Total 6, something like that.
That was it?
Yeah.
Oh my God. I thought the number was a bajillion times higher.
No. That was about it.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, you are a legend.
In my own mind.
Well, in all of our minds down at Comedy Sports. Before we end, I like to end with a couple games here.
Oh, cool.
I'm going to put out
a
bunch of papers here,
okay.
All different Comedy Sports games.
Oh.
I want you to pick 2.
2.
And tell me what your favorite was to watch
of
and
those.
Why.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you know the games, there might be some in there. Oh.
The first one I picked was Moving Bodies. That was hysterical. Well, I got to say, the most fun thing, I'll say fun things about both of them. Moving Bodies was really fun to watch when Bo Johnson was the person moving people.
Okay.
Talk about commitment.
Yeah.
That guy, it seemed like everybody was always pimping Bo about making verbal... I'm flying now. And, you know, he's picking somebody up and making them fly through the air. It wasn't just moving their hands and arms around the bow. It was a full body experience. Moving Bodies was, and the other one I picked was Forward Reverse.
Oh, my favorite.
Is that your favorite?
It really is. I know it's like the first scene game you learn too. And well, I adore that game.
Do you mind a story related to that?
Not at all. Go for
Probably it. Only my third show that I ever played.
Yeah.
I'll never forget this. Joe Cortese was reffing. And I don't know if they still have this, the Bucket O' Games. And you would just
I don't know that they do that anymore.
Go into the random bucket, little wooden blocks with all the games on. So it's just randomizing.
Yeah, random choice.
It's all about random choice. And before the show, as the field manager, a show that I was suddenly playing in, I had gone out to like pick out the games that I couldn't possibly play or didn't want to.
Right.
So I'm like, oh, I don't want to play. Well, I'm taking the chance out of it, which is cheating.
Right.
I'm admitting right there, I'm a cheater. But maybe Joe must have seen that or something, because he came out and started the show. And I remember I was playing with Dan Harmon.
Yeah.
And Kurt Scholler, I want to say.
Okay.
Were my teammates. And we're great to have the two of them, pros, to be playing with. He decided to make the entire show a ref's challenge. We didn't do bucket of games.
Oh, no.
And so the first scene, when it came to a team choice, he looking me straight in the eye, he goes, "All right, I challenge you guys to do scene in reverse," which I think is one of the most mind-bending games.
That is one of the hard, not forward reverse, but
no,
scene in reverse.
Scene in reverse.
That is one of the hardest games.
Holy mackerel. Thank goodness that Dan and Kurt took the lead, and I came in and was an ancillary player, not even knowing I should be walking in backwards,
right.
Stuff like that, and trying to keep track of it mentally.
It's hard.
Oh, my goodness. That was... If your question had been, what's the toughest moment you had on stage?
That would be
your only third show you've ever done.
Oh, that's brutal.
And you're just used to trying to get used to the bright lights in your eyes.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah. Oh, well, he challenged. You know, you don't get better unless you stretch.
Heck yeah.
That's true in just about every profession.
And so how'd you feel after?
I was glad to be moving on to the next game. Bring on Dr. Know-It-All.
Hello.
Some of those easy games. So those are the two I picked, moving bodies forward, reverse. That would be an interesting one to combine. Remember, they used to do that too, games.
Dick would always combine games with marshmallows.
Marshmallow forward, reverse. So you'd have to end up spitting the same marshmallow back and out of your mouth.
In and out of your mouth.
And he would think that was really funny.
Should know. We're going to end with a would you rather... PJ. Mm. All right. This is, I'm going to give you two choices here, and you tell me what would you rather do.
Sure.
Got it?
Oh, easy.
Easy peasy. Here we go. The would you rather be known for speaking pig Latin or for making underarm fart noises?
Is there a C? I'm going to have to say pig Latin.
Pig Latin. That do it for you?
I'm not into juvenile humor.
No?
Yeah.
I never am.
I'm more, not that I'm a great intellect, but I'm more word game person.
You are. You are very intelligent. Whenever I talk to you, it's usually when I'm getting a massage.
Yeah.
You start talking, and I feel like I'm a drooling moron in the corner. You are so intelligent.
That's the hands.
Well, you read everything. You're very intelligent.
To keep up. I'm old, and I've been paying attention.
All right, I got one more for you.
Okay.
Oh, that's really gross. I'm not going to ask you
that one. Don't do gross.
Okay.
Ones.
Would you rather, oh boy, pee in your pants instantaneously whenever you're nervous or vomit violently and unpredictably once a day?
Oh, this was easy, actually. You know why?
Why?
Yeah. It's pee in the pants when I'm nervous. I'm not nervous anymore.
Oh.
Yeah.
How did that change? Were you ever?
I did have this, I think, interesting. Stage fright happens early in your career.
Yes.
And when you do enough plays, mm-hmm. Some people never lose it, by the way.
Sure.
And some stars, they're nervous every time. In my life, after the first few professional seasons, I didn't get stage fright anymore.
Okay.
But when it renewed itself later in my life, I was probably 40. When I started doing comedy sports, 40, 41,
yeah.
I relearned stage fright. It came back to me. But even after a few times of doing comedy sports, I wasn't nervous anymore. And I'm confident enough now. I'm 66 years old.
You don't look it.
But you get to be old, and you've been through most life circumstances
mm-hmm.
that are extremely challenging or that you've seen before. And I just think you then have answers for those moments.
Yeah.
And what is nervousness, but not having an answer for the moment?
Hmm.
So because of that, and I don't get nervous very much, I wouldn't pee in my pants.
So there you go. You beat the system.
I did. I rigged the game.
Before we go, Peach,
yeah.
Tell me the story of Not Normal.
Your nickname,
PJ Not Normal Rockwell.
Well, we go back to the story of my first playing and having just 5 minutes preparation that Saturday night when the stage fright really was there.
Yeah.
I thought, you know, you usually have a nickname, which I love because, you know, I did Mr. Voice
right.
so much, and either coming up with nicknames or being it was important to articulate them properly and have them written out phonetically in some cases. So I didn't have a nickname, so I turned over the player introductions to Roger.
Okay.
And I just thought it should flow with your name, and since it's Rockwell, it should be not Norman Rockwell.
Norman Rockwell.
So it's PJ, not Norman Rockwell. But he heard it as not normal, which is certainly true as well.
So then he says that as you're running out.
And then it stuck. And I've always wondered how many of the nicknames that are used happen that way.
Right. Are they? Yeah.
Maybe they're just happy accidents.
Sure.
I remember recently I came back and did a show, Mr. Voicing, last summer.
Okay.
For Esther, wanted me to come back because her son was having Sean was having his 11th birthday.
Okay.
And she wanted me to do the Mr. Voice. So I met a bunch of the new people, and who were all delightful human beings, and loving. And again, I mean, wow, Insta family.
Just, absolutely.
Just
comedy sports.
Just add laughter
family.
And mix.
Yes.
Anyway, so I in doing that I. Learn all the nicknames and spell them out phonetically and stuff like that. So that I get back, and then they're all really hard names. I wonder. I know where he's going. Alan Guskowski.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, he was like to me at the time the most sort of seasoned professional of the people that I'd heard about.
Mm-hmm.
It's very funny and always quick witted.
Yeah.
And his comments, like on Facebook, are always great. And so I thought, well, he's probably going to be specific about his nickname. And he was going, oh, whatever you say. Just make something up.
Make it up.
I loved those. The people, and respecting the people who were attached to their nicknames.
Sure.
Very important.
Yes.
But people who allowed me some leeway, that was fun. It was my own little improv.
Do you think you've assigned some nicknames then? Do you remember making up some nicknames that have stuck?
I'm going completely blank on any of the nicknames that I may have.
Or did you change them like every week?
No. In my experience, most people were fairly, they had specific nicknames.
Right,
and
committed
they stuck with them.
Yeah.
I remember Paul Stazak was at one time G-Man.
Yes,
and G-Man. When I came back, he was Dutch.
Right.
Because he was on the radio.
He's on the radio. Yeah, he was on the radio.
As Dutch, so he wanted to be called Dutch.
Yeah.
And so that was every time I did the announcing, because in that first incarnation in the early 90s, he was G-Man. There was always a hitch in my giddy-up in my delivery. Like, okay, do the new one. Angelo Farina was Blaze to me.
He was Blaze.
And then he was the Godfather.
The Godfather.
You make that adjustment.
Sure.
It's important to players. It's a sense of identity.
It is. Back in the day, I was always Rolo. Nobody called me Christine, and now I'm down there, people call me Christine. It still weirds me out.
Christine.
Hit the N. Christine. So, PJ, you are a delight.
Oh, well.
Yeah. It is refreshing.
And yet the sun shines on your back.
No, go on. It is refreshing to have you here. I appreciate your time and your voice and your talent and your kindness and your massage.
Oh. I'm not necessarily in that order.
Thanks for coming in, PJ.
You're welcome.
The Comedy Sports Podcast is produced and engineered by Kyle Hannikin. Our announcer is Mr. PJ Rockwell. Feel free to like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram. Comments and inquiries can be sent to thecomedysportspodcast@gmail.com. Created and hosted by me, Christine Rolo Capriolo. Thanks for listening.
The Comedy Sports Podcast is an independent production made by CSC Players. The views and opinions expressed by the podcast host and any guests are their own and do not represent the views and opinions of any CSE location or CSE worldwide. Vocabulary used by the host and guests is not necessarily representative of the CSE brand.